This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
I said this earlier. I've had to ask myself several times today, what day is it, right, Sue? Because of the holiday.
Yeah.
Kind of throws us off. And then there's the snow days, which will continue to throw us off. Are you seeing things in our area right now, by the way?
Yeah, like
the
immediate area? It's moving in from the south and from the west a little bit.
I don't like it.
I don't either.
Although, you know, here's one issue. I thought I was going to have to drive home in it. And you're right about one thing. Even when I came in here several hours ago, people have taken the day off.
They really
right?
have.
And they're not on the roads, which is a good thing because there's too many people that don't know how to drive or they have bare tires, et cetera. So we're going to keep you posted. Dave says that maybe 3 to 6 inches, depending on where you are, certainly to the south, a little bit more. And, well, north of where we are, I think they're going to get very little, you know, just a little dusting or so. So we'll keep you posted on all of that. J. Peter Zane is back with us this afternoon. He's an editor at Real Clear Investigations, has written about Doge. I want to talk about Doge. There's some interesting things even in the aftermath of the weekend related to Elon Musk. And the big interview is tonight on Fox with Sean Hannity, the president, Elon Musk. Peter Zane, how are you? Welcome back to 97.1 FM Talk.
Wow, thanks so much for having me again. Yeah, we're getting some weather here in Raleigh, too, and I feel like before long, everybody's going to live in Florida.
Our deal here is it's just I don't know about Raleigh, but we just have not had a real winter. We used to here in St. Louis, but we haven't had one in a while, right, Sue? You know, we've had some dumpings of some snow. Sometimes we get, you know, dumping in March and it's wet snow, but this has really been a real winter. I mean, really cold, lots of snow, ice. We don't like it, Peter. That's all we're saying.
We don't like it, but we love Doge.
We do. Now, let me ask this, because, you know, you and I haven't talked about this yet. I've read some of what you've written, and I'm looking forward to this conversation. But one of the things that people have asked me, and these are usually people who don't support Doge, all right, hey, what do you think about all this? You know, well, I think I like it. And here's why. Because if you go back to 1984, when I first voted for an American president, Ronald Reagan, I philosophically always wanted federal bureaucracy and the federal government to be reduced size, scope, spending, all of that. We've never done it, Peter, as you know. It doesn't matter if there's a Republican Congress, Republican president. We've never done it. So I know a lot of this seems like it's scorched earth, and maybe some of it is, but this is the only real opportunity in my lifetime I've ever seen at having a chance of success in peeling some of this back. And I think maybe that's part of your perspective as well.
I agree. And I mean, what's been making the Twitter sphere or the X sphere, whatever, is Bill Clinton called for Doge-like efforts. President Obama called for Doge-like efforts. I was on the phone with a friend today, and he had a great line. He said, this is like Harvey Weinstein. Everybody knew that this terrible stuff was going on, and nobody did anything about it. And what Trump and Musk have done is finally not just called it out, but tried to take action. And I was also read somebody was talking today about how, oh, well, I support this effort, but, you know, this is too much too fast.
Right, right.
And I agree that, but think about the only alternative is a blue ribbon commission that takes 3 years to study the problem and it gets forgotten. I mean, we have tried and tried and tried to do something about it. Well, not tried. We've talked about it. And finally, he's doing it. And the way you do it is with a chainsaw. And I would rather do too much and build back than not do anything.
I'm with you on that. Yeah. because I've seen, look, Simpson Bowls comes to mind. I had great conversations. I loved Alan Simpson. I thought some of those recommendations were great. Nothing happened. The Grace Commission. I'm so sick and tired of blue ribbon panels because there is nothing that gets done. So now you have people. Let's go to 60 Minutes because I watched 60 Minutes this morning. I wanted to watch all three stories. The story on Timothy Chalamet is actually really good. The other two are kind of crap, like 60 Minutes would be expected to do. But they do an entire segment, Peter, on Doge and USAID, and not one time, and I was paying attention because I was ready to cite it, not one time did they mention anything about any specifics of the wasteful spending or where this money's being spent. It was all about the poor people that work for USAID and how Trump and Musk are, you know, doing a, you know, whatever the hell right. they're describing it. It's just ridiculous. Coup. Well, that's what they want to say. It's a coup.
Well, Musk has not gotten into this yet, but we, Real Clear Investigations, and others have reported that there's been found about $2.7 trillion of improper payments in the last two decades. So anybody who says there isn't fraud, fraud's been established.
Yeah.
It's been proven. Anybody who's read any of the COVID stories knows that scammers, many of them abroad, stole hundreds of billions of dollars. So the idea that he hasn't shown fraud, he doesn't need to because it's already been established.
Thank you. And let me make a broader point there because I was trying to say that last week because people kept saying, where's the fraud? Look, all you had to do is Google something. The IRS 1 year ago in March of last year put up on their website a report of $9 billion in CARES Act fraud. And that's just the CARES Act.
Oh, I mean, and again, just Google improper payments.
Right.
And you will get trillions of dollars. So they're totally disingenuous with that. What I would say, though, is if we want to really just take a step back, most of the federal spending that's given us the giant debt is great society programs. It's Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security. I think there's probably a little bit of will to do something about Medicaid because it's poorer, able-bodied young people. But we're probably never going to really address the deficit unless we figure out something to do about those things. So I think
I
that
agree.
This is important what he's doing. The other thing I'd say is, you know, a lot of what Trump and Musk are doing is really about institutional capture. And that is the people working at these bureaucracies all are from the left. And that's why you see that 98% of the people in Washington, D.C., and then a little lower, but mostly the surrounding counties in Virginia and Maryland, they're all Democrats. So he can remove a bunch of those people, but I don't know who you replace them with unless a bunch of conservatives decide they want to go spend their lives working for the federal government. So it's just a, I think you can downsize, but the sort of institutional capture, the assumptions that these people have that guides what they think is well and good, is going to be is just another challenge. And I'm not saying, you know, you don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, and I think they're doing a lot of good, but, you know, it's a really hard problem that they're addressing.
It is. And, you know, I guess a lot of us might be in the camp to say, even if they can claw back some of this nonsense, it's worth it because we haven't had any level of success. One of the things that you pointed out goes to an issue that I raised last week, twofold. I would say, why in the hell are we, you know, why did it take Elon Musk and Donald Trump to expose a lot of this in the last 3 weeks? And by the way, where have our friends in journalism been? The ones that want to point to all this right now and act like it's a coup, where have they been reporting some of this stuff? Because clearly they're not interested in the waste at all. They're only interested in the federal bureaucracy, you know, aspect of this. It's quite staggering when you listen to CNN compared to Fox or CBS or some of these other outlets. Now, I could criticize Fox a little bit for perhaps not getting into some of the legitimate questions about the way that this is, you know, going down. But the other side acts like there's no waste or anything. No fraud, no abuse, nothing. This is all fine. You know, drag shows in Burma. No problem. Let's write the check.
So I would say that the, and this is one of the points I wanted to make in my column, was for a long time, and I think there was some truth to this, journalists just felt like the public knew that the debt was horrible, knew we were spending too much money, but it was boring. Like, no one's going to go read some eat your peas story about the federal budget.
Right.
And I think that, I think one of the great triumphs of Musk so far is that he's made math sexy again. He's made these numbers for a little while something that we're all interested in. And the pace of the revelations really makes it quite exciting, what he's doing with these government numbers, which mostly people probably would have just, you know, moved on to something else in their reading. I think that's something that he's done that's made a difference.
But one of the criticisms, Peter Zane is here from Real Clear Investigations. What I hear a lot of folks on the left saying is like, they're just going through, I had someone on Twitter say this, it's just a bunch of teenagers that are going through and they're, you know, they're addressing spending projects that they don't like. So it's basically only about things that they don't like the money being spent on. It's not about anything more. That's one of the criticisms that they level. Just nonsense.
Well, two points to that. One is that, yes, and those you guys were pressing your own things that you like for so long. So there's actually a half of America that doesn't agree with what you're doing, and actually more than that at this point. So that's one. Two, again, the disingenuousness of these people. If you spent any time in Washington, you would be shocked at how young everybody is that's doing all the work.
Oh, yeah.
There are the older, established people up top. Elon Musk, at least, is not just taking some guy who, like, oh, I went to Dartmouth, so therefore I'm smart. These are actually super accomplished people, you know, many of them who didn't need to go to college because they were so darn smart. They instead started their own companies. So, you know, but the idea that the youth is a problem, just go look at who staffs these federal agencies. They're all children.
But the narrative,
the old man.
Yeah, the narrative from the children that are also working behind the desks at newspapers and media outlets out there is that, oh, this is going to hurt, you know, kids. I'm sure kids will be cited because all these NIH grants will be cut back and we won't be able to have these experts do their research, which is typically wrong to begin with. And we're not going to be able to pay them to do the research that's wrong to begin with now. So that's going to kill kids. That's sort of the narrative that we'll hear.
So the two things. One is the only people that they've gotten rid of so far were people who were probationary workers. So all these CDC people were people who were hired in the last year. They didn't get rid of, like, the seasoned person who's got 20 years or whatever. Maybe some of those people should go, too. But the federal bureaucracy grew, like, 8 or 10% employees, Biden added. I think 8 or 10%. And, of course, there's a whole other pool of employees, which is the contractors, which is, like, 7 million people.
Right.
So that's another thing you got to go after. There's about 2.5 million people that work for the federal government, and there's 7 million contractors and grantees.
But so, in that 60 Minutes piece that I mentioned, they have these two people that work for USAID, and they don't know how to pay their bills, and they don't know what's going to happen yet. All these people are sharing the story of families that are, well, here's one of the issues, I think, from my perspective. People that have worked in these federal bureaucracies, and this probably trickles down to the state and local level, certainly here in St. Louis, they're not used to anything like this, because the rest of us have been fired. A lot of us have had to find jobs. We've been, you know, the victims of layoffs.
That's my next column.
But yeah, these workers.
It's shocking. And in journalism in particular.
Yes.
It's been ravaged. It's just shocking to me that these people are pretending like you can't fire somebody where everybody they know has lost their jobs and had to get on in their lives. And many of them have had to leave the field they wanted to do. It's so unrealistic.
Well, that, you know, I want to have empathy for people who aren't going to have a job, but I think that they're not looking at these issues through a lens that the rest of America operates from. So I'm looking forward to that column, Peter Zane. I think that's a great topic.
Yeah, no, it's there is basically an air of unreality because these people, my colleagues in journalism, are results-oriented, and the result they want is to defeat Trump. And what's interesting about it is that you see that Democratic voters in general, either there are some who are mad, but most of them are like wait and see or holding their fire. The Democratic Party, you know, part of it is that they are, you know, not together on a message, but they can't find a message because a lot of what Trump is doing is popular. So almost all of the vigorous resistance now is the media. And what they're showing us once again is how the left-wing legacy media has been a prime source of divisive partisanship. Because what they have done is they have a view that are held by 10 or 15% of the elite. And the rest of the country doesn't agree with it or doesn't understand it. And that's what you see with you know, the transport stuff and all of this stuff with USAID, as people learn about it, you know, they're horrified. They're like, why are we spending our money on this? But the 15% of elite people who work at the big journalism outfits, who go to Davos, who run government agencies, they have very particular views. And so while the rest of the country's sort of cheering or wait and see, we're seeing now how out of touch they are and also how mean they are.
Yeah, it's on full display.
Because they don't just cover this with understanding and compassion. They attack in the harshest terms.
My friend Scott Jennings has been keeping a check on some of that at CNN, and I have some audio to share from Scott here in just a couple of minutes. Peter Zane, always great to have you on. Thank you so much. I look forward to the next column.
Thank you.
All right,
pleasure.
Take care.
And congratulations on the racquetball win.
I need that. Thank you very much. Yeah, the sport that nobody plays, but I did get two victories, so that was good. Listen, I have a collection of audio here that really applies to everything that we've just been talking about. First, Lee Zeldin, former New York congressman who is working on the Trump team now.
So starting September 18th of 2024, there was a financial agent agreement that was entered into between the Biden Treasury Department and this outside bank. After that, there were additional agreements, an account control agreement, amended account control agreement. The dates show this rush. It was actually on Election Day, November 5th, that the General Counsel's Office was providing a legal opinion on it.
So this is at EPA, because he's the EPA Administrator, Lee Zeldin.
Amending these account control agreements right up to the week before inauguration. Now, $20 billion going out the door up front should be a big red flag, because what makes so much more sense is that if somebody is going to receive a grant, that they are doing work and then they're coming back and they're asking for the next tranche of money, as opposed to just fronting all of it. Now, what's crazy about these different agreements that I've read through over the course of the last few days is that they deliberately, in writing, make sure that they are drastically reducing accountability and oversight by the EPA, by government.
Yeah, this is where I think the EPA, you're going to find a lot of shenanigans for sure. But here's where it's going to get interesting. And, you know, I probably will spend more time on this tomorrow. There's going to be people throughout the country, including here in St. Louis, will be researchers at WashU or SLU or elsewhere that are on the government dole. You know, my favorite is the researchers, because they put these studies out and they're in journals that nobody gets, right? And they may make the news and they scare people, like you have to drink wine every day or, you know, your heart's going to go. And then they go back and forth. I remember the 80s, like, oh, if you drink wine, it's going to kill you. Then it was like, all right, drinking a wine, a glass a day, that's going to help your heart. They don't know. Okay.
No.
So look, there's science. I get that. But the experts are wrong on so many different fronts, and we pay for them to be wrong. I mean, our tax dollars pay for them to screw things up on a regular basis. I need to go no further than COVID. There's even some Dr. Birch stuff today that's pretty interesting on COVID. But let me get to some of the things related to DOGE on CNN. Here's Kevin O'Leary.
Always cut deeper, harder when there's fat and waste. The FAA, it's not the people. The code is cobalt. It's from the 60s. It needs CapEx put into it for the technology to be upgraded to make it safer. Fat, like a chicken. All of these agencies are like big fat chickens dripping over barbecues of fat. This is the best barbecue I've ever seen, but
yes.
I don't think it's happening fast enough.
Yeah.
Not cutting enough. Keep slashing, keep hacking while you have a 24-month mandate before the midterms. Cut, 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 cut more.
Yes, more, more, more. But you know what that's going to do? According to, I don't know who this idiot is, but you're going to hear Jennings weigh in, that's going to ruin the economy of Kansas City.
Is it?
Well, this is good news for St. Louis, because they've been kind of kicking our ass on some of the fronts. But apparently, they're more addicted to DOGE, I think, than St. Louis, because this woman on CNN thinks their economy's dead.
I actually think it's okay if they run into a stumble here or there, because the project is so massive. The need to cut is so massive. The government is so massive, it's inconceivable that you wouldn't make a mistake here or there. But I think that's acceptable if the greater goal is achieved, which is a smaller government, more efficient government,
trim
the fat.
Even if someone dies, or even if someone...
Are you alleging that someone has died from this?
We don't know. I'm talking about when the rubber meets the road. I'm talking about, for example, Kansas City. Mm-hmm. 30,000 government employees might be laid off. It will destroy the economy of Kansas City. That's okay?
Okay, two things. Who's died? Okay, they're gonna blame everything on Trump and DOGE, right? But Kansas City's done. You better tell Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid.
Why do you say that?
Because I'm reading what the individuals from Kansas City have been saying, that they're very concerned.
What do you think they're going to say when they're going to get whacked?
Of course they're going to say that. But my point is, do we think that's smart to live in an American city, just go under?
How many American cities need a massively oversized federal government to stay afloat? I mean, isn't that said more about the city than the government?
But when did we get to the point where presidents are measuring themselves by how many people they put out of work instead of how many people they get
and
jobs
not a moment too soon.
This is crazy. This is absolutely
because the government only ever gets
big
bigger,
fat chickens. Hopefully they lay some eggs and maybe then we can afford
it. No, you heard what Jennings said there. It only gets bigger. They only get fatter. This is why I support this, because they've never gotten thinner, not even just a little bit. Now we got, you know, Ozempic, and that's going to be a good thing. We got much more to go, plus an audio cut of the day.
Get more at 971talk.com.